How is everybody doing tonight? Welcome back to another episode of Boys in the Zone. A little bit under the weather last week, so we did not have a show. So I'm going to be catching up on this Dallas Cowboys draft class. And I'm here with none other than the best, Mike Guido of the Grid Network, also with the Bi-Coastal Baseball podcast slash show. Great guest. He's a Cowboys fan, a friend of mine. And it's great to have you on, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Yeah, it's going to be fun tonight. I haven't really had a proper platform to break down the draft class that I wish that I could have. So it's good. It's going to be fun doing it with you tonight.
Yeah, awesome. And if you guys have not already checked out the mock draft that we did, and then we did a little bit of the live show on the Grid Network. So if you want to see some of that stuff, go check out on the Grid Network. And then I believe the mock draft, the full round mock draft was on my show as well. So really fun time. And we nailed some of the picks on there. So if you want to go back and see how good we did, it's a fun thing to do. My guy OG saying, yo, boys. We also got Vince P saying, what's up, guys? Thanks for joining the show, guys. First thing I want to get your opinion on, Mike, is Zeke returns. It's official after the draft. Yep. Leading up, I believe Todd Archer was talking about, the Cowboys and Zeke are possibly reuniting, but it's not for sure a definite thing until after the draft. He passes his physical, and now he's back on the team. This time, not 21. He's going to be number 15. Talk about Zeke. Do you see him as a running back one? Do you kind of see him as running back two? Where does he fit in with this whole scheme, especially in the West Coast offense that he has not been a part of in the past?
First, I want to say this. I'm very disappointed that he's switching to 15 instead of 21, because I have two 21 Zeke Elliott jerseys that I no longer, that I was getting excited to bring out of the closet again. And now I can't anymore because the wrong number. But here's the thing. I think that it is more likely than not that Zeke is going to be their go-to guy in the backfield. That's just kind of the feeling that I get. I don't know that Rico Dowdle is going to end up taking any spots from him. I don't really see much out of Royce Freeman, Malik Davis, any of those guys. I think at the end of the day, they could very well just end up being training camp cuts. I think they're just bodies to put on the field at the moment. And obviously what we saw from Deuce Vaughn last year, and I think what we saw, from Deuce Vaughn in college is he's a change of pace back at the very most, right? Like, he's just a guy that, he'll catch passes out of the backfield. He's one of these little nifty, shifty finesse guys that can, if you put him out in open space, he can make people miss. But yeah, I think Zeke is going to be the guy that gets the bulk of the carries. And honestly, it's tough to expect anything much from Zeke now, right? Like last year, there was really like a steady decline in his production, over the past several years, but career low in yards per game, career low in yards per attempt last year, career low in total yards. It's just like, I think it's kind of safe to say that obviously he's pretty much bottomed out almost. So there's not much to expect here, but I think he's probably going to get most of the carries. Yeah.
For me, one of the most exciting prospects of this whole thing is Mike McCarthy bringing in an actual fullback in Hunter Lipke. Pair that with Zeke. If he can follow those goal line, reps behind a Hunter Lipke, I think you've got something that's worth having on the team with Zeke.
Yeah. Oh,
now,
yeah.
What I kind of question and where I'm kind of weary on the whole thing is, like you mentioned a little bit, the yards per carry, all of that stuff was down. And while, of course, New England does not have a good offensive line, right, we didn't either last year. One thing I do believe that Zeke is undersold on is he does have pretty solid vision. Now, he might not always have the extra gear to, cut back and get to the spot where he needs to be. At least you don't have the worries that you had kind of with Tony Pollard last year of him not seeing it as well. So I'm excited on that front. But like you said, he's kind of lost a step. He's not completely the same Zeke. And even though, he's wearing 15, doesn't mean that we're going to get a newer version of him.
Yeah.
I think this is the turning of a page and accepting this is what he is as a player, and we understand that, and we're going to utilize him to the best of his ability. But I don't see him as a running back one, in my opinion.
No, now, OG,
he says he's a veteran presence, great blocking skills. No way he doesn't fit well into this offense. Only thing is, I worry they won't start him. So he's on the other side. He's on the other side of the page on that. To be fair, he was in the worst offense in the league last year. That is completely true. I mean, they had an abysmal pass attack. They had zero wide receivers there in New England. The offensive line was in shambles. So that is very true. My guy Botchi says, what's up? What's up? Crack him if you got him. A long time Can fan, fan and part of the Can fan, honestly, nowadays, with those guys also on the Grid Network. So I always got to shout out my guy Boots, on the ground, Eric. And he says, like and subscribe also. Yeah. If you guys, if this is your first time on the show, please do like and subscribe. Only helps me grow. And also if you like baseball, go check out Mike's show, subscribe to him as well. And we're just trying to grow as a network here on the Grid.
Yeah.
Getting back to the show, though, overall, I do think that he is a good scheme fit with the West Coast offense because, like, sure, he's not the greatest out of the backfield as a pass catcher. He's decent at catching the ball regardless. And sure, he's not a breakaway home run threat, but he's going to catch the ball. You don't have to worry about drops or anything like that. Yeah. Another thing is he's great at blitz pickups, awesome pass protector. So that's going to go a long way.
Yeah. Let me just throw this out there too, because like I was discussing this with a few people, a couple of weeks or I guess last week when they signed him. Right. Because first of all, I want to be clear. Like I like the fact that they signed him. It didn't feel right last year when he wasn't in the locker room like that. It doesn't feel right. He should be, he's a cowboy. He should be here. And I think from a culture perspective, I think it generally helps. And listen, what OG said in the comments is 100% right. His blocking skills are going to come in handy. Something that really suffered last year with Tony Pollard as the primary back. Also something that suffered with Tony Pollard as the primary back was you didn't really have a body that could burst through a line at the goal line. You just didn't, right?
Yeah.
Zeke has that guy. It has that kind of mass that can power through a line. Now he doesn't have much burst, but that's kind of, I think that should be his role now, is that, yeah, they might use him as a primary ball carrier. That's just the feeling that I get, but
yeah,
I kind of also get the feeling of like, they should really take advantage of his other skill sets. I mean, like he's not an amazing pass catcher, but he's not a bad one either. Like he's definitely done it in the past. The Cowboys, I don't think, used that skill enough his first go around in Dallas.
You know,
to begin with, I wouldn't even be opposed, and I want to get your thoughts on this because this might be even a little bit controversial, but I wouldn't be opposed to, in some sets, playing him in line. Like I think he's big enough to pick up a block and go out on an option route if you really want him to.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I'd use him as like an inline tight end kind of a deal, but at least in that kind of pistol formation and just send him out, he's good enough to do that. my guy Boots said, yeah, what are you guys talking about? Zeke is going to pick up right where he left off, starting center. No. Realistically, you think about like prime Zeke. Back in the day, like Scott Linehan was very good about getting Zeke the ball in open space in those screen games, plays. Excuse me. I think realistically, he doesn't have that same burst, but he's one of those guys, man. He's a smart, intelligent player on the field. And so you use that to your advantage. You don't always have to have the most juice if you can't, you know, use it right. We saw that last year with Tony Pollard a little bit with the vision. I think they're going back to that kind of thunder and lightning thing with Zeke's return, because Rico, I mean, he looked like the back with more juice last year with Tony Pollard on the roster as well. So if you can kind of recapture what it was in, what would that be, 2022, you know, maybe you do have something with this running back group, and you mix a little bit of Deuce Vaughn in there. I don't think he's always going to be on the 53 active game day roster, but the new kickoff rules has me more optimistic about him possibly actually making the team versus you know, going into the season before that rule came out, I was saying, yeah, he's a practice squad guy. So interesting deal right there. Let's jump into the rookie class. Our first round pick, we initially had the 24th overall pick. We trade back to 29, I believe, with the Detroit Lions, pick up that extra third rounder who ends up being Cooper Beebe. We'll get to that pick. But with number 29 overall, we select Tyler Guyton, Oklahoma, right tackle, who's looking to transition to left tackle. Only one start at left tackle in his collegiate career, from my knowledge. He was a guy that I coined as the most overrated player in this draft class early on in the process. So kind of funny, you know, how that works out, and the Cowboys go ahead and grab him. But, you know, overall, I'm coming around to the pick. You know what I mean? I think that my initial thing was, man, we got to get one of these tackles that are, you know, ready to start right away. All of those guys were off the board. Realistically, you could say Jordan Morgan, but Jordan Morgan at 24 was a reach for me as well. And I liked Jordan Morgan. I just didn't see the upside of picking him at that range. And then you drop back and you lose Jordan Morgan. So, and you also lose, you know, Graham Barton. Now, I would say that Tyler Guyton plus Cooper Beebe is better than Graham Barton and whoever else, you know, you could have got for in that tackle position later on in the draft, but I digress. So Tyler Guyton's been working with Duke Manny Weather. He looks like he's getting his hand solved, which was his biggest minus for me whenever I was grading him. What were your thoughts on Tyler Guyton and overall the pick at 29?
Well, if they made the pick at 24, and I think this was kind of the general consensus among Cowboy fans, was if they picked Guyton at 24, they hated it, but they picked Guyton at 29 and they loved it. Right. So I think I even said this to you on the draft show. Like, I went into that pick being okay with it. And I probably said it to you 10 picks before they actually made it, where I'm just like, we're so drafting Tyler Guyton. Like, we are just, it's just going to happen, dude.
Well, my thing with leading up throughout the whole entire draft, I got on the Can Fan show earlier on in the day and I said, they said, what do you think is going to happen at 24? I said, I think we're going to trade back. And I put that out there. I didn't say for Tyler Guyton or anything like that, but all throughout the whole day leading up, I was thinking, man, I really don't want the Cowboys to draft Tyler Guyton. Man, all these excuses, and we end up drafting him. But continue with your point.
But given the circumstances, right? I mean, it's really not the end of the world. I mean, Tyler Guyton's a really solid tackle prospect. I don't think he'll really have much issue moving over to left tackle. You got to keep in mind, he's fairly inexperienced at the position. So, you know, one of the things that comes with an experience, you can kind of look at as a positive. And you're better at evaluating offensive linemen than I am. But, like, lack of experience, there's a plus side to it because you don't develop that many bad habits set in stone yet. You know what I mean? So Tyler Guyton's a very moldable prospect, I think. So they can turn him into whatever they want. And, listen, I said this during the draft show also. I mean, if you look at the left side of that line, right, because I'm pretty sure, like, Tyler Guyton's going to start at left tackle week one. I'm telling you right now, I think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, realistically, your only other option is Chuma Edoga. And I think that we've seen enough of that last year. So.
And I think Chuma Edoga is a guard. Like, I think Chuma Edoga is better suited as a guard. But, like, Tyler Guyton and Tyler Smith on the left side of that line is a mountain. Like that is like two guys that are like 6'7" and 300,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, they are walls over there. So, like, I think eventually we're going to get to a point, and it might not be this year. Tyler Guyton is going to have his rookie struggles as he sort of figures out NFL football and figures out how to block NFL guys. It's a different game from the NFL, from college to the NFL.
Yeah.
But I think in another year or two, and I would even lean more towards another year of figuring it out more quickly, that's going to be a mean left side. Yeah. Like that's kind of where I've had time to think about it, thinking like Guyton as an athlete can really grow into that position really well.
Absolutely. And a lot of people forget Tyron Smith was a right tackle in college. He played right tackle his first year, his rookie year. And then he transitioned to left tackle and he was, you know, all pro. So now, obviously, Tyler Guyton is not the polished player that, that Tyron was. And Tyron was, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, he was literally exactly, if you built a left tackle in a, you know, a machine, that's what Tyron Smith would be. So,
and he's a Hall of Famer. Tyron Smith's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
So here's my thing. I tamper on the overly optimistic fans that want to make Tyler Guyton, oh, he's going to be so great, all pro, blah, 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 blah. His hands are not very good right now. I'm going to tell you that right now. When he gets out into the pulling game as a blocker, he takes bad angles, doesn't really, and like you could just go check out some game tape of Tyler Guyton as a pulling blocker versus Cooper Beebe. Cooper Beebe is an assassin in the open field at just pancaking guys, completely putting them in the dirt and creating lanes for the running back, the wide receiver, whoever it is. If Tyler Guyton can learn something from Cooper Beebe, and somebody's, you know, called me or didn't call me, but they said learning from another rookie, blah, 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 like that could never happen. No. Rookies teach other rookies stuff all the time. Like just because somebody's a veteran doesn't mean that they automatically know what's better than, you know, something else. Like rookies come into the league each and every single year and they're an all pro or they're making the Pro Bowl. So there's rookies that are absolutely capable of teaching another rookie or even a 3-year player something that they didn't know. So what I was saying, though, is Cooper, if Cooper can somehow show, teach, whatever word you want to use for Tyler Guyton to learn how to be a really good pulling blocker, that's going to go a long way, especially with Terrence Steele getting further removed from that ACL. I think you could actually have a legitimately good offensive line in regards to running. Now, I will tamper a lot of people on the pass protection of Tyler Guyton because I really do think that he's going to have his hurdles to overcome, especially year one. Not only is he switching from right side to left side, but his hand tech is just bad. I think that a nuanced rusher is going to exploit that so easily and get inside of that inside shoulder with the inside swims or set him up with the, you know, the speed rush to the outside, then spin inside. I think that don't be surprised if Dak gets obliterated a couple times this season because of Tyler Guyton. Now, I think he's going to have some good growth as a rookie. He's working with Duke Mannyweather. I'm not a huge believer in Joe Philbin, the current offensive line coach. If you know anything about him, I mean, he literally worked under Tom Landry whenever he was the head coach here. So this guy is an old guy. He's bounced around the league some. I'm not the biggest believer in him, but Tyler Guyton, like we have alluded to already, he's such a moldable already, like he's just the foundation right now. You can build him as you want to the specs that you want. So you fix some of the stuff
his ceiling is super big. I like, he can really turn into a solid, and I shouldn't say solid. He can really be a more than solid NFL offensive lineman, but you're right. It's going to take coaching. It's probably going to take at least a year to really see, okay, yeah, this kid can be really good. You know what I mean? Like, I think you're going to see flashes of him, like, you know, blowing guys up throughout the year because he's just that naturally gifted and athletic. But, you know,
I completely agree with that. Like, he's a specimen. Like, truthfully, he's 6'8", has 34 plus inch arms. He has all the length that you want from an offensive tackle. He's just got to put together the technique. And I think he's going to be good. Like I mentioned in my scouting report of him, I think that he has a higher ceiling than some of these other guys. The Troy Fontenus, even the Olufoshanus and stuff like that. Like the guys that are better than him currently, I think he has a higher ceiling. It's just, can he reach that potential? My guy, Bot G, Eric, says, Guyton was also a tight end at one point, and he can move. You know he's going to line up as an eligible receiver at some point and catch a touchdown or even a two-point conversion. just make sure he's eligible. That's right. We don't want any Dan Skippers out there.
No Dan Skippers.
My guy, OG, says, what if you move to left, unlocks his hand skills? That's what happened with me, with my teacher, tried to get me to write with my right hand in elementary school, LOL. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, man. I think that the move from the right, especially, I mean, he's played at TCU right tackle. He's played at Oklahoma as a right tackle. So it's just flipping everything. And it's not when you're a kid. When you're a kid, they say if you can teach your kid a second language, the yeah. best time to start is when they're very young, because their brains are just so capable of learning and absorbing stuff at that point.
Right.
When you're a full-grown man, it's a little bit harder to switch everything you've learned and redo that stuff. And so
it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. Like,
exactly.
Like
yeah. Yeah.
There's a real point of that. But again, there, like I said before, there is real merit in his semi inexperience as an offensive lineman, just because he's played so many other positions. He was a tight end. He played running back for a little bit. He's definitely been around the offensive side of the football. He played defensive tackle, I think, at some point. He's played a bunch of different positions.
Cooper Beebe played defensive tackle, actually. And actually, what's funny is I think three or four of the seven, or how many people do we draft?
Eight
draftees were tight ends at one point in their career, which is kind of funny. But let's just jump to the next guy, Marshawn Nealon. He was a guy that I mentioned possibly sneaking into the first round in our mock draft, two-rounder. To Detroit was my big landing spot, just because of the pedigree and his hard-nosed mentality. He's a great run stuffer already.
Yeah.
Very big. Some people kind of compared him to DeMarcus Lawrence. He's actually bigger than D-Law was coming out of college.
Yeah.
He's a guy that you possibly could kick into some three tech, but overall, man, you use him on those early downs that you are anticipating a rush or a run on, and just let him be really good. I think that so many of the Cowboys Nation fans have talked about defensive tackle, linebacker over and over and over ad nauseum, and we've completely ignored how important it is to have an edge player that can run defend as well. We have D-Law. DeMarcus Lawrence Dorrance Armstrong was okay at it. Micah is not very good at it. Dante Fowler wasn't very good at it. Sam Williams is okay at it when he's really tuned in to trying to stop the run. But whenever he's not, he's hit and miss. So getting a player like this that is in the mold of DeMarcus Lawrence, you give him a year with DeMarcus Lawrence to kind of mold that. And then if you do let go of D-Law after this year, he's only on the 1 year deal.
Yeah.
You have your heir apparent right there, and then you have Sam Williams kind of as more of your backup to Micah Parsons. I actually really liked the pick. I'm interested to kind of hear what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, so in our grid group chat, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my exact words were, "What a shitty pick" when they first made it. But listen, I get emotional when picks don't go my way. I'm very passionate about the draft itself, so you know, I it's very hard for me to take the fan hat off. So you're 100% right in the fact that it is important to find edge players that can play against the run, and Marshawn Nealon can absolutely do that. He is a big time energy guy, and that's really, I think, my biggest takeaway here is that, like, Mike Zimmer being the new defensive coordinator, this was a very Mike Zimmer-ish kind of pick, right? Mike Zimmer is one of these guys who just doesn't take anything from anybody. You know what I mean? He wants dogs, and if you want, and the reality is, I mean, that me and, you know, our buddy Barry Grant Jr. talk about this all the time. He's like, listen, this defense doesn't have, like, we have tons of talent on the defensive side of the football, but no grit. Like, there's no like guys that are just going to, you know, bite your kneecap off. Right. Like there's no guy like that. Marshawn Nealon is that guy. He is not a finessed edge rusher. He's not, right. He is a guy who more often than not relies on his strength to bull rush guys. Now, that's not to say that that can't be developed, but he's one of these guys that's going to bully you at the line. So here's the thing that I was skeptical of. And I think it was only the year prior we had drafted Junior Fajoco in the fourth round, right? Mm-hmm. And Junior Fajoco had very similar accolades, right? Like Junior Fajoco at that time, both him and like Junior Fajoco was a whatever he was, Mountain West Player of the Year, and
yeah,
drafted because he was 99th percentile against the run among edge rushers. I'm like, are we just kind of retreading the same tires here by drafting someone? Now, I think Nealon's a better prospect, yeah, but mm-hmm. are we just kind of saying, okay, because how many games? I don't know if Fajoco dressed for a game last year. I don't know that he did.
I don't think he did.
So I'm like, are we just like, is this just going to be one of those?
Well, you know, my biggest thing with Fajoco, I don't think that they knew what he was yet. I don't think that they were completely on board with him being a three tech or an edge. And that was the big thing. And then the depth that we had last year at the three tech position and the edge was just, I mean, I there wasn't really a spot for him to get in. Now, I do expect him to possibly see more time this year. It'll be interesting to see if he's more of an edge or a three tech. But with the Nealon pick, and I think that this was a big point of emphasis for the Cowboys, because you think of the best players on the team, they were all guys that weren't super highly recruited out of high school or really even, you know, college. They had to kind of work, grind, their positions. Dak Prescott, Deron Bland, you think of DeMarcus Lawrence, you think of who am I forgetting here? Tyler Smith, all of those guys were not the highest grade, you know, crazy five-star recruits, mm-hmm. but they were willing to work. They were willing to get better and grind, get to the point where they're at. And Marshawn Nealon fits that bill. And a lot of these draft picks, especially Cooper Beebe as well, came in as a defensive tackle for K-State. Then they transitioned him to offensive line, and he's just, you know, he's one of those guys that just continues to get better. But back to Nealon, I just think that his mentality of wanting to continually be a high motor guy, do the right things, and willing to sacrifice his sack number sometimes to play the run that he does and be like, oh, okay, it's for sure not a handoff right here. It's for sure, okay, now I can get the quarterback. It comes as a detriment to him sometimes, but when you look at his pressure numbers and his advanced metrics on, you know, PFF and stuff, he has the makings of a good pass rusher. He really does. So that's where it gives me, you know, the positive outlook that he can possibly be your D-Law replacement, and he has the upside of being coachable, a workout warrior kind of a guy. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be a locker room guy. And that's what I think that we need in here, instead of the guys that are of the kind of diva mentalities where they think that what they should have is already given and not earned.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I mean, I think that, you know, as far as his motor is concerned, I mean, he's, like I said, he's a dog, right? It's got Mike Zimmer written all over it. He's just one of these guys that's going to hit you. You know what I mean? So that's something that I admire about him. And I agree. I think that, you know, the upside for him is definitely there to eventually replace DeMarcus Lawrence. And I think that there's a chance as well that, I mean, I think he's going to see the field this year. Like I
do too.
I don't think this is going to be, like I was mentioning before, a Junior Fajoco situation where like the depth of the position is too deep. He didn't beat anybody out, and he's mm-hmm. just going to be buried on the practice squad all year. Like I don't think that that's going to happen. I think he's going to get real snaps. Like, so I genuinely see that happening. But I guess my question at the time, and again, I've kind of come around to it where I'm just like, okay, I could live with that, you know, with this pick. I probably wouldn't have invested in an edge rusher this early in the draft, given their specific needs. But at the same mm-hmm. time, like, listen, Nealon's a good player. You had him graded as a near first round talent. So,
Well, Adam is a second round grade, but still, I just thought he could sneak in there. But yeah.
Yeah. But hey, listen, look, like I said, he plays like his head is on fire. He hits people. He's without a doubt a strong kid. Like, and you know, this is one of these things where, like, I think he's going to be constantly playing with a chip on his shoulder, because mm-hmm. that's just who he is as a player. So
small school guys, man, I know that Will McClay hasn't liked them in the past as much, But man, these guys that have been smaller schools, the Tyler Smiths, the Deron Blands that have come in here, you've gotten really good play out of them.
Yeah, recently. That's the thing too, is like just knowing that about Will McClay, right? And I think Will McClay is among the best in the business at building rosters. He's really, really, really good. But just knowing the fact that Will McClay doesn't really like to invest in small school guys knows that if he's willing to invest in a small school guy, he must really like the prospect, right? If you're talking about guys like Deron Bland and Tyler Smith, both of those guys are all pros at this point.
And, you know what I mean? Like, and here, a lot of people are talking about, Mike Zimmer, Mike McCarthy. I don't think that either of those guys were big on the decisions for this draft. I think this was more of a scouts draft just because knowing what we know, they're on 1 year deals. Like how much does their word actually carry weight to the draft decisions now? Like you've got to factor that in. And Marshawn Nealand fills a need. You've lost two of your best pass rushers from last year, Dorrance Armstrong, Dante Fowler Jr. And you're probably going to lose D-Law after this year if you go up and re-up Dak, you pay Micah, you pay CD. Like, there's only so much of the pie. So, I like the pick. Moving on, though, Cooper Beebe, this is obviously probably the fan favorite for the Cowboys. It's just Cooper Beebe was an absolute dog for Kansas State for basically 3 years in a row. Came in, played as a freshman at sometimes, wasn't a full-time starter, obviously, at that point, but just an absolute dog, man. Played some tackle even at K-State, and he's not really a tackle in at the NFL level, but he's a guy that has so much versatility. Now he's probably looking at going into center, and one of his former teammates has alluded to, back when we were at K-State, we would switch positions all the time just to know stuff, just to feel it, and so Cooper Beebe, man, I have no questions about him being a center, and he's 335 pounds, I believe. Something he's just huge. Yeah, he's a people mover. He's a dog. He's a high motor guy, high intelligence guy, and a high work guy. He's one of those guys, man. You want him in your locker room because you know that you never have to question his work ethic, and you never have to question his game prep. So I love Cooper Beebe, and especially at center. And if, let's say, we'll talk about the camp battles later on. If it is Hoffman versus Cooper Beebe and somehow Hoffman beats him out, I would not be surprised if Cooper Beebe sometime during the season is in there instead of Hoffman after, week four, week five, because they don't want to just hand the reins over instantly. It's one of those things, man. Cooper Beebe is just he's like one of those can't miss prospects honestly to me. I had a second round grade on him. So
yeah, I think they got tremendous value. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying before of like getting Guyton and Cooper Beebe is better than getting somebody like Graham Barton or Jordan Morgan in that spot. It 1000% is. They got tremendous value, I think, with Cooper Beebe, because I think, even if it isn't now, right, even if it's not week one, Cooper Beebe will be your starting center. He will be at some point your starting center, and a good one. Like, I don't think that this is going to be like a, I was more of a Tyler Biadasz fan than most people. But I think most of us can agree that coming into his draft year, Tyler Biadasz was supposed to be a perennial Pro Bowl center, and he just wasn't. Like he injuries really got to him, and he just never really developed into that player. He was a solid center, but not a great one. I think Cooper Beebe could be a great one. I mean, if you just look at the way that he plays, right? Yeah. First of all, he loves, and using like using his own words, right? And it's, I'm not using his exact words, but he likes putting people in the dirt like that. He really enjoys getting into people. So again, it's another one of these physical players that I think fans are going to love. He's just got that thing where he's so big where like he's not big for a college guy. He's just big. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like he's going to, I think he's going to be such a valuable run blocker especially at the center position, which was something that Biotis really was not. And, you know, here's the thing. I think that realistically, this is going to be one of those picks where you could look back, I don't know, 5 or so years from now and say that this was the best one that they made in this draft class. Cooper Beebe was a phenomenal pick at that spot.
I agree. Moving on.
Yeah.
Maurice Liafu. Maurice Liafu. I still haven't pronounced his name right. I don't think a single time yet.
That's what it is. Liu
whenever
Fao.
Liu Fao. Okay. Let's see. Usually when I can't pronounce their last name, I go to their first, but his first is just as hard as his last. So
right.
I just call him ML. No, Maurice Liu Fao. Honestly, whenever I checked him out on tape, he was a guy that I only watched one game of. I liked him in coverage. I thought that he was a guy that would come up and tackle, not really the greatest tackler by any means. I don't think that his, you know, his ability to wrap up was all that impressive. Yeah. My thing was, one, he was kind of an injured guy a little bit at Notre Dame. Two, I didn't have a third round grade on him. I had a fourth. And that was me just kind of earmarking it because I really didn't get the full, you know, written and, you know, analysis of him.
Yeah.
But man, at 87, I think is where we took him. He's a guy, man, you can see the potential of him. I'll say that.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Some people now, I'm not on completely on this board of him being the next, what's his name?
Sean Lee. Everybody's
not Sean Lee. Gosh, why can't I remember his name?
Eric
the 49ers.
Hendricks. Oh, Fred Warner.
Fred Warner. There you go. Warner. Thank you. People are saying he's the next Fred Warner. I'm saying pump the brakes on that a little bit.
Yeah,
I like him in coverage. I really do like him in coverage. But I just don't think that he's a fly around sideline to sideline, hit you, get up, talk smack in your face kind of a guy like Fred Warner is.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's as cerebral, smart, and really calculated on, oh, I see hole, hit hole kind of a thing. He's an upside pick. He's a guy that's probably going to play a lot of special teams first year.
Yeah.
He's kind of a pick and stash kind of a guy because you are trying to rebuild that room. One thing I will say about this draft, though, is your offensive line, it was a weakness. I actually think it might be a strength going into this next year. I like say what you want about Hoffman. Hoffman is your backup center is pretty good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Tyler Bass or TJ Bass, whatever you want to call him, as your backup guard either side, plus Chuma Adoga in there at guard, pretty good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And Chuma also has the flexibility to play some tackle. Then you add in Asim Richards plus your starters. Like, you feel pretty good about that room now.
Yeah.
Now
and don't underestimate Nathan Thomas, too. I mean, Nathan Thomas, who they drafted into this, I'm sure we'll touch on him a little bit more later, too. But Nathan Thomas, I think, could immediately come in and be a swing tackle type of player. Like, he's an experienced player. He didn't allow that many guys by him in college. You know, and he's another one of these big offensive linemen with good hands. So I, you know, don't be surprised if
he's a guy that also he hasn't played football for very long. He started playing football, I think, his junior year of high school. So he's a guy that, you know, a good foundation that you can build upon as well. But we'll get to him a little bit later. But I was going to go back into this linebacker talk.
Yeah.
You've got you brought in Kendricks. You've got why is his name escaping me?
Damone Clark. You've got
Clark.
DeMarvion
that I almost called him Cox. Yeah, DeMarvion Overshown, which is basically a rookie now because he's coming off the ACL. So
Then
you pair Maurice Liafu. You also signed Wilson as well back to the team. So your linebacker core isn't great by any means, but it's not bad. I think you're actually better at linebacker this year than you were last year. So I like that. And I really do like playing Damone Clark on that weak side position instead of middle linebacker. If you can get some good middle linebacker play out of Kendricks, I think it's going to go a long way for this team. But the pick was, What was your thoughts?
Yeah, this was really the only pick in the draft that I didn't like. I just didn't see the value here. I thought Liu Fow was a fourth, fifth round guy. I agree with you. I think he was, you know, better in coverage than he was against the run. You know, one of the things about Maris Liu Fow that I really didn't like is that, you know, it's not even that he's not a great tackle. It's that he overplays his angles. So
overextends.
He thinks he's faster than he is and he'll miss tackles. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I agree. And the other point that I agree with you on is, like, he's going to play a lot of special teams this year. I just don't see him making a big impact I just don't see it. And listen, if the goal is that we just want to draft guys that have high upside, okay, fine. But this, I think, and a lot of people are criticizing the fact that they didn't draft a running back. It's with that pick that I think that they should have used it. Like, that's, if you would have substituted, I say this all the time, if you would have substituted Maris Liu Fow with Marshawn Lloyd, I think this is an A++++ draft.
I'm right there with you.
You know what I mean? Like, this is where I think they overextended. This is where I think they really kind of made a mistake. That's not to say that he couldn't potentially be a good player, but this was a, like, I would not have gone in this direction. I think he's at best right now a rotational linebacker. I don't think he sees the field much. Now, DeMarvion Overshown, I love. Like, that guy, I think, is going to be a real problem. He's one of those guys where, like, if you want to talk about he's good in coverage, DeMarvion Overshown is like a safety in coverage. That guy can really go and get the football. And we saw in preseason last year, before he got injured, he's a physical ass player. Like, yeah, that guy goes in and hits people.
Well, you said he's like a safety in coverage. I mean, he played safety.
That's what I'm saying.
So
he can go and get the football. So I have faith in that. In that aspect of the linebacker room, Maris Liu Fow, I think, was like that. That drops down the class for me overall. It just, I did not like the Liu Fow pick at all.
Yeah, I'm weary of, like, not saying that I don't like it, because it is almost basically a fourth round pick at this point. So it's a guy that you feel like, hey, we need some depth at the position. We'll get this guy. We feel like his upside is better than some of these other guys. Don't hate it. Don't love it at the same breath. This next pick, though, Kalen Carson, I actually really thought was a great pick. It was one of the draft steals, in my opinion.
Me too.
This guy is not only a guy that has seen some ball. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a guy that's just raw. You're going to put him out there. He's seen ball, but also he's relatively good in getting pass deflections. Not really a super ball hawk corner, per se.
No,
like, he's
not
going to
really
get a lot of interceptions, but he gets pass defenses, which means that you're sticky in coverage. I didn't get to watch a lot of him, but I think that he can play zone. He can play man, press man. Yeah. He's a guy that can hit you. A good tackler.
Phenomenal. I think tackler. That, yeah.
It, I think that. Sorry.
Go no, ahead. No, no. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that he is your eventual, probably outside corner, and then you move DeRon Bland back inside for the nickel eventually. Now, I don't know if that happens year one. Obviously, you want to keep Jordan Lewis out there for what he does. I mean, he's just really good when he's healthy. And we saw that toward the end of the year, Jordan Lewis had that resurgence. But, overall, I kind of do like this cornerback depth right now. And then you still have factor in Eric Scott from last year, if you can get anything from him. And now, with what I'll say about Mike Zimmer earlier, like, he probably doesn't have much, you know, voice in the, you know, draft, whatever you call that, war room.
Yeah.
However, he's a secondary guru. So if he can coach up this guy, he can coach up the Eric Scotts of the world. I think that we're going to get some good return on these corners these past 2 years. I'm hoping that Eric Scott can give you something, because he's a, you know, more of an athlete guy. But I kind of like our corner group right now. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about him and your overall thoughts on the roundabout room.
Yeah. Listen, I thought Kalen Carson was a third round pick. Like that was kind of like redemption for me. Right. Mm-hmm. After Leufeld, because I love Kalen Carson. I love Kalen Carson. And here's the thing. Like when he was at Wake Forest, he had the notable game for him is when he went up, when he played Florida State and essentially shut out Keon Coleman. Like that was really a big time game for him. My favorite part about how Kalen Carson plays is that guy is a wrecking ball at corner. He'll hit you, dude. Like he's a phenomenal tackler for his size. Cause he's whatever, he's 6 foot, 190 pounds or something like that.
Yeah.
Like he's not a big, big corner, but he's one of these guys where like he's an incredibly sticky man corner. He gets his hand on the football. He doesn't come away with a lot of turnovers, but he's just one of these guys where like, he's a really solid corner. I think he sees the field soon. Like he's going to see action so far this year, especially because the rumors are right that they could be interested in bringing back Gilmore. I don't know if that's going to happen, but
especially that happens, I'll be really happy about the room.
Me too. But even if they don't bring him back, I think Kalen Carson could see the field relatively early in his career. And I agree with you. I like Kalen Carson to me has the makings of a starting NFL corner. Like that's a real starting corner. So, you know, if you can end up with a future corner room of Diggs, Bland, Carson, I'm okay with that. Like I'm very, very okay with that. So,
and here's the thing. If you're getting a guy that can start for you, now this might not always be Pro Bowl start, you know, an all pro kind of a player, but if you get a starter in the fifth round, that's a plus. That's a check. Okay, we've got a good player here. That was a good draft pick.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be an all pro. And you already got Deron Bland 2 years ago in the fifth round, and he's an all pro.
No,
so
what
you've
you need
already
is a
struck gold.
That can stick to guys and be a pest. Like that's the thing. He's like Trayvon Diggs, and we didn't see him last year, but Trayvon Diggs, as good as he is,
yeah,
right. Like, and he's certainly better than what he was early on in his career, right? Because he was an interceptions machine, but he got burnt a lot. Mm-hmm. Right. Trayvon Diggs isn't that corner anymore. Right. He'll obviously take the ball away, but that's his primary main focus, right? Is taking the ball away. Fine. Mm-hmm. Deron Bland is sort of a similar cut mold kind of player. Kalen Carson is the opposite, right? Kalen Carson will not sacrifice coverage for a turnover. He's a guy that is like Kalen Carson is going to catch punches in the face from wide receivers in his NFL career, just because he's so annoying, especially at the line of scrimmage.
He kind of reminds me a little bit of is Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
Like really, a super turnover machine, could get interceptions and probably does have, you know, a crazy amount now that I'm saying this because he's played for so long, but still just a pesky guy that's going to play hard physical coverage on the outside.
I agree.
It
was one of my favorite picks. It might have been my favorite pick of the whole draft. Words cannot tell you how much I love Kalen Carson. Like he was, I don't have my rankings in front of me, but I probably graded him out as probably near close to a top 10 corner in the draft.
Yeah.
Like he's really that good for me. You know, like obviously, you know, he's not better than, you know, the Terrion Arnolds and the Cooper DeJeans and the, you know, the Quinyon Mitchells or anything like that, that all went first round, but you know, Cooper DeJean went in the second, but like the guys that were projected to go in the first round, he's not that, but I think he could have been in that next tier of corner where like, I don't think you're projecting him as a star, but you're projecting him as a legitimate NFL starter.
Yeah. There was a big group of that kind of third tier for me on the corners that were all really sectioned in, like take your pick, you feel really good about any of those guys, and he was kind of in that third tier for me. Ryan Flournoy.
Yeah, Ryan Flournoy.
Okay, that's how you say it. Okay, I have not got to watch this guy minus some highlights. I haven't been able to find any all 22 of him. So from my understanding, he's a guy that has, I think he was like a fifth year senior, a guy that kind of came to football a little bit later, got on the field finally. He's an athletic guy, kind of boxes people out, goes up high on, you know, at the attack point for catches. He's better over the middle than some people want to give him credit for. Now, I have not watched him all 22. This is kind of what I'm hearing from people that I trust in the Cowboys, you know, draft show and stuff like that. but overall, man, sixth-round pick, you bet on a guy that can probably round out your wide receiver room, and you kind of feel like he's a replacement for what you lost in Michael Gallup. I like the pick. I'm not sure if I love him on film or anything like that, just because I haven't been able to find him on film, just because he's out of like southeastern Missouri or something like that.
Yeah, Southeast Missouri State. Yep.
Okay, Missouri. Okay, so yeah, add on something else. Missouri State on the end of that. So yeah, I didn't really get to watch him. Short synopsis of what you thought of him and if you think he's going to make the team.
I think he could make the team. Just because I don't really view the wide receiver room in Dallas to be that crowded, right? Like CeeDee, Brandon Cooks, and Jalen Tolbert, I think are shoo-ins to make the team. I think Kevontae Turpin is going to make the team also. Not really as a wide receiver, but as a return guy, I think he's gonna you know, take.
So that's five. They'll probably keep six. So
I mean, right? So I mean, if it so depends either, on
you know, can he beat out Jalen Brooks?
That's can he beat out Jalen Brooks? And Jalen Brooks looked pretty good in preseason last year. So yeah. I mean, you know, there's something there. One thing I can say about Ryan Flournoy is that he is a physical specimen. Yeah. Like he's one of these guys that like at the catch point is super, super reliable. Ran a 4.44 at the combine. Really physical player. Again, he's not a refined route runner. He's obviously, I mean, like I said, he ran a 4.44. He ran a 4.45, right? Yeah. So, you know, you're not like in love with his speed, but he's not slow, you know? So he's just kind of like, it's, you know, it's kind of funny that this comic gets brought up because it gets compared a lot to Dez Bryant. He's
talking about Martavius Bryant.
Even just the name Bryant reminds me of it, but he gets compared to Dez Bryant a lot. Yeah. He's not nearly as good of a prospect as Dez Bryant was, but at the same time, you know, he does kind of share a lot of similar qualities. He's a project wide receiver that could surprise people in camp. You know, like I just,
that's where he's got to be good. He's got to show out a little bit in preseason in camp in order to make the team. And I think that Jalen Brooks, like, from what I've saw from the offseason, he's been putting on weight. He's been putting on muscle. Like, he looks more like an NFL-ready wide receiver, too. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a camp battle, and we're going to talk about camp battles a little bit here.
He's a nice player. I mean, Flournoy is a nice player. He saw solid production at Southeast Missouri State. Obviously, there's, you know, the competition you're playing there. I mean, you're playing on high school fields when you're playing at a college like that. So, you know, there is something to be said about that. But I liked the pick, truthfully. I like, again, in the sixth round, you know, if you want to take a flyer on a wide receiver who's super athletic, then okay, like, you know, take a stab at refining his route running and turning him into a real receiver. I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah, these next two picks, I'm just gonna kind of group together real quick. Get your quick thoughts on them. Nathan Thomas, we talked about him a little bit. A guy that came to football a little bit later. He has a lot of tools. Had a little bit of injury concerns, if I'm not mistaken, at Louisiana. But overall, he's a guy that you can build up. Justin Rogers from Auburn, more of just that kind of guy that you're expecting to hopefully help in that defensive interior against the run. Yep. Doesn't give you a whole lot in pass rush. Just kind of dart throws to see if they can stick.
I think Nathan Thomas is a fairly underrated pick. I was expecting him to go day three, but I'm also thinking like seventh round, that's fairly good value for him. You know what I mean? Like he's one of these guys that, you know, I think genuinely has a future as a swing tackle. You know what I mean? Like that could be a guy that you could keep around for a while. Now, again, I don't know where, like you said before, the offensive line kind of became a strength over the draft, right?
Yeah.
But do I think that there's a chance that he could beat out somebody like Matt Wiletzko for a roster spot?
Yeah, I don't think that Josh Ball, Matt Wiletzko, any of those guys are making it.
I think they could be gone. So yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if he's on the roster. Justin Rogers is interesting because Justin Rogers is pretty much Quentin Bohanna. Like he's just one of these big true nose tackles that is going to try and clog up lanes. Like that's really what he is. So again, if his upside is not great, right? Like Justin Rogers is never, I don't think he's ever going to be a Pro Bowler. Like he's never going to be.
He's a guy that could realistically make the team just because of where the depth is at that position. Behind Mozzie Smith, we don't really have a true one tech on the team. And even at that, Mozzie's rehabbing a shoulder right now, and he lost a whole bunch of weight. So what do we really have at the one tech position?
Right, exactly. And that's kind of where I'm going here is that like he can play a role. Like Justin Rogers is going to be a true run stopping one tech nose guard that is just going to be like over the center, stop the run, right? If they come up the middle, use the butt, because he's a big boy. Like this guy weighs like 340 pounds. Like he's really, really
346.
Big. Yeah. So, you know, I think again, seventh round pick. If you can find guys that play legitimate roles, I'm in.
Yeah. All right. Jumping over to the camp battles.
Yeah.
Name three camp battles that you're most excited to see. And I'll start mine off with one, and then we'll let you go and we'll kind of go back and forth.
Okay.
My biggest one, and I think this is probably among the most touted right now, is Brock Hoffman versus Cooper Beebe for the center position.
Right, yep.
I'm expecting Cooper Beebe. You know, he was a third-round pick, high third-round pick. He's a guy that's just seen a lot of ball. I'm expecting him to beat out Brock Hoffman. Now, my thoughts are, do they kind of keep Brock Hoffman as a backup center, or do they try to cross-train him and guard and center? Because keeping a backup center typically isn't protocol on NFL teams. So it's going to be interesting to see that.
I think that they would, if Cooper Beebe genuinely wins the job at center, I don't know that they have to cross train Brock Hoffman, because I think that you get that versatility with Cooper Beebe. So if Zach Martin goes down, or if Tyler Smith goes down, or even if Tyler Guyton goes down and you want to move Tyler Smith back out to left tackle in his spot, I think you move Cooper Beebe to guard and you put Hoffman at center. Like that I think would be their primary
course. I think that they would try to get Bass in there before they did that. But still, to your point. So that was my biggest one that I think is just going to be fun to watch, man. Beebe versus Hoffman. Hoffman's been in the facility training, working his tail off to get better. And I do want to see him have a fair shake at the offensive center position. Now, do I want him to win it? Probably not, just because I think Cooper Beebe is going to be better. But I do want to see him get a fair shake at that position.
Yeah. No, I think he will. You know, and look, I think this is probably my top camp battle too, just because, look, I think that's going to be the one that everybody's going to be talking about, right? I don't know that very many Cowboy fans have a lot of faith in Brock Hoffman. And listen, I don't know if they should or they shouldn't, but, you know, because we haven't really seen him play much. But Cooper Beebe is just a mountain of a man, dude. I just kind of get the feeling that he's going to walk into camp. He's just going to throw people away. And like Mike McCarthy's going to look at him and be like, okay, like, what am I going to do? Not start you? Like, I don't see that. I think Cooper Beebe, they're going to get him comfortable enough where he's going to be snapping the ball enough times to where he'll be fine. Like, I don't know that is really going to be a worry. So I think BB's the favorite for the spot.
it's not like the Cowboy, and it's not even like Dak really takes all that many snaps out of shotgun anyways.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I don't see it being a huge problem. What is one of your biggest camp battles?
Yeah, outside of Cooper Beebe and Brock Hoffman. I mean, I think a camp battle that we could genuinely see, and maybe I should save this one for a little bit later, just because it's a little bit down the depth chart, right? I think Jake Ferguson and Luke Schoonmaker are the locks for TE1 and TE2, right? Mm-hmm. TE3, I don't think Peyton Hendershot is.
Well, there's Peyton Hendershot.
I think Peyton Hendershot.
McEwen, John Stevens Jr.
I think the guy to look out for is Brevin Spanford. Like, that guy, I think, could make the team. He's a good receiving tight end.
Another thing, though, sorry to cut you off, is you've got to look at how much money they spent to bring him in. They're not just spending money just to, okay, this guy's not going to make the team, we're going to lose all this money. He has a realistic shot at making this team just based on the money. And I said that last year with Hunter Lipke because of how much money they threw his way.
Yeah.
So that's something you cannot snark at. But go ahead with the
look, Spanford's a fifth-year – he was a fifth-year senior – at Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. The only reason I think that he didn't get drafted is because he saw a regression last year to what he did in 2022. But like size, athletic ability, I mean, he's 6'7". I mean, like, the guy's like a basketball player. Like, they might just look at him in camp, you know, just athletically and just be like, you know what? This guy's better than Peyton Hendershot. Like, I think genuinely, they could look at Brevin Spanford and he could take Peyton Hendershot's job away. I think so.
No, I think that you probably have that dog-eared, because Peyton Hendershot didn't show anything last year. You already know what you have in McEwen, and having Schoonmaker plus McEwen is kind of a redundancy, in my opinion. I think that you drafted Schoonmaker because you liked his upside as a blocker. Or not upside, you liked where he was as a blocker and you liked his receiving upside more than Sean McEwen. So, I think that you're right on the money. My thing would be, it's really, in my opinion, between John Stevens Jr. and him. I don't think that Peyton Hendershot makes the team. Call me crazy, but...
I don't think you're crazy.
The second one I wanted to bring up is that linebacker two, the weak side linebacker spot, between Overshown or Damone Clark. I think that Kendricks is pinned there at middle linebacker.
I agree.
Most of the time, you're not playing three linebackers in today's NFL anyways. You're going to be playing that nickel or the dime. So, you know, sometimes you're not even playing two. But realistically, you're usually playing the nickel, so you're going to have two linebackers on the field. Is that Overshown or is that Damone Clark? Because I think Kendricks is already pinned as the middle linebacker starter. Where do you see that going? And for me, I'm looking for Overshown to make the push to be that guy, but I love Clark in that weak side role more so than the middle linebacker role that he was kind of forced into after Sean Lee went down.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that Damone Clark is, I think Damone Clark won the position last year because Overshown got hurt. Like, that I think is the deciding factor. You know, I think you could have looked at camp last year and thought, okay, you know what? Overshown might have won the job over Clark last year. I don't see this as, I mean, I shouldn't say I don't see this as a legitimate camp battle, because it absolutely is. But I have a lot of faith in DeMarvian Overshown. I love him so much as a player. And I think they really think highly of him too. I mean, he's just such a great all around linebacker. I mean, I think you saw a lot in camp last year. I mean, they drafted him as a guy who was going to specialize in coverage, and they saw last year, you know what, this guy can actually get down and hit people. This guy's pretty athletic.
And,
he's a good
one thing I really
like.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. Sideline to sideline, especially that first preseason game versus the Seahawks when he gets hurt, obviously. But He was sideline to sideline. He was reading stuff. He looked like very in tune. Like he was digging into his film all week. You could tell because of where he was going in that game. And just, I loved his juice, man. I loved his want and his motor. And that's what I really, I think, not that Clark lacks in those departments necessarily. I just think that he was completely lost as far as the mental aspect of the linebacker game last year.
Yeah.
And I think when you allow him to play more free, and that's why he could win this starting job as the weak side linebacker, because he's so much better just playing free sideline to sideline versus thinking, oh, I got to hit, I got to get this hole, or I got to go right here, or I got to drop back in coverage because this tight end is in line, but he's not a blocking tight end. So he's usually, he's probably coming out with the Y option. Stuff like that is just, I don't think he's cerebral enough to pick up on those cues.
Yeah. I mean, So wait, are you telling me that you're all done with the Marquise Bell at linebacker experiment?
Yes. Well, I mean, realistically, if we're talking, hey, we're going into the nickel package and it's a 3rd and 10, go ahead and throw him out there. Like, he's good in coverage. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but if it's, you know, 3rd and 4, you got to have a legit linebacker out there, in my opinion.
You have a big body that can that can stop people. I agree. Listen, I think that you're right. Eric Kendricks, I think, is pretty much cemented at middle linebacker. You know, for that Will linebacker, I just kind of see it as a, I agree. I think it's Clark and Overshown. I don't think Liufau is going to fight for the spot. I think Overshown's just going to win it. I think he's just a more athletic player. We saw what Damone Clark was last year in a more of a restricted environment. And we just like Damone Clark didn't impress me. So I think Damone Clark's going to get his snaps, but that's really it.
Yeah. Falcon says, I mean, the injuries forced him to play linebacker. Bell did well for what he was forced to do, basically, with the injuries on the team.
Yeah,
and I completely agree. He was
fine.
It wasn't bad. It's just like, it's almost like asking a player to play, you know, power forward when they're usually, when they're really supposed to be more of like a shooting guard. Now you get the rare people like the Charles Barkley's that can do that, but to hedge your bets on that is probably not very wise, kind of a thing. So, what's your second biggest camp battle that you're looking forward to?
See, and put me on the spot here, eh? I think it'll be for, At this very moment, as currently constituted, I think it'll be for that fourth corner spot for me. Mm. Because if you really think about it, right, Trayvon Diggs, Deron Bland, Jordan Lewis really kind of seem to be
1-2-3. Yep.
1-2-3. I think that you could see a legitimate battle between guys like Kalen Carson, guys like Eric Scott, guys like Nashon Wright. I mean, like, I think Nashon Wright is in danger of not making the team. That's the first thing. Cause I think Nashon Wright was a very Dan Quinn kind of player, underdeveloped kind of guy. And since then he hasn't really done much on this roster. I think he could be a goner.
Side note though, real quick, cause I'm interested to see what Israel Mukwamu does.
I was about
Mike Zimmer comes back in. Does he play safety? Does he, especially cause now we've kind of found some safety depth now. You Wanya Thomas, Marquise Bell drops back to safety again. You got Hooker, you've got Donovan Wilson. You're probably only keeping four safeties. Israel Mukwamu is a guy that is more of a weapon with the versatility, and I think he's actually better at corner than he is at safety anyways.
He's a
so
good cover corner. Like that's the thing. Like the snaps that we have seen of Mukwamu have been solid snaps. He's actually a pretty good cover guy. So I'm a Mukwamu fan. I mean, I'm kind of glad that you brought that up because, like, I agree. I think he's more suited as a corner. I love his size as a corner.
And you know, another thing that we've got to bring out with this discussion is Mike Zimmer loves to bring in past players to play for him as well. And he's a secondary guy. So do we look at some of these other guys that played in Minnesota as possibly, you know, reuniting with Mike Zimmer, especially in training camp, or
it's possible
after some cuts too.
Certainly. Yeah. I think it's possible that happens. but even if you were to tell me right now, excuse me, that our corner room to start the season was going to be Diggs, Bland, Jordan Lewis, Kalen Carson, Mukwamu, I'm good.
Eric Scott. Yeah, you only, right. you would only keep five?
If you keep six, I would say Eric Scott is the next guy. But if those are the guys that are going to see the field, right, I'm good. I don't know that that's a group that you need to really improve on. So
my big thing is Nashawn Wright. How much does Bones Fossil like him on special teams? Because when you're talking about cornerback five, cornerback six, it's more of how much versatility does he have in special teams unit?
Yeah.
More so is than can he cover, because typically you're not playing your cornerback five, six. Right. You know what I mean? So right.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting one to look out for.
Sure.
My third and final one is going to be that quarterback two position. Trey Lance has all the world of options to impress during preseason and training camp, because he's going to get a large majority of those snaps in the preseason games.
Yeah.
They know what they have in Dak. I will be surprised if they even play Dak in the playoffs. They didn't last year. I would be surprised if they played Cooper Rush a lot in the playoffs. They know what Cooper Rush is. So Trey Lance is going to have every single opportunity there is in the preseason. Can it be good enough to really beat out Cooper Rush and make the Cowboys feel, hey, let's let go of Cooper Rush. He's, you know, due this much money, and we can save that, roll it over to next year, where if we do have to pay Trey Lance, we can.
Right. Yeah. No, hey, listen, I was a much bigger Trey Lance fan than most people. So I kind of get the idea. I kind of get the feeling that he's going to kill in spring, I almost said spring training, see, baseball brain, but in preseason, just because I think he's that talented. And when he got hurt in San Francisco, he wasn't playing poorly, you know? So like, I think there's a real shot that, like, if you asked me today, who's the better quarterback, I would say Trey Lance is a better quarterback than Cooper Rush. Like, I that's the feeling I get. And Trey Lance, I think, can play better behind Dak than Cooper Rush.
He's more cut from the same cloth as Dak too.
Exactly.
So
right. He's more. I think he's even more mobile than Dak. I think his arm is stronger than Dak. I think all those qualities apply to Cooper Rush as well. But like that's one of the things that, like, Trey Lance to me could be one of those backups where if Dak goes down, your offense doesn't lose anything with Trey Lance. Like, I get that feeling with him.
Well, you actually might gain something in Trey Lance, not from, you're probably taking down the precision passing and just the know-how to set the offense up with Dak, but Trey Lance gives you so much better ability with his legs. He's just so much faster. Dynamic. He's I think he's more willing to run too than Dak. So, it's one of those things, man. I'm very interested to see what Trey Lance has during the preseason, because I think it's going to be very indicative of how they feel and how they assess Dak Prescott's contract.
Yep.
Especially like if they go all of training camp without signing Dak, I would not expect an extension at all during the season.
I agree.
Then if they see, like, let's say that Trey Lance does ball out during the preseason, and you blow out teams by 40, you know, on any given night, and he's your QB2, you have the ability to put him in live games at that point, and you can kind of get a feel, like, is this dude good? Like, could we possibly see a world where Dak Prescott leaves in free agency and we roll with Trey Lance the next year? It's a real possibility.
That's the thing, is I, like, all the talk right now is that, you know, and we just heard it from Steven, right? Like, Steven just said that, you know, our priority is getting Dak done. And that very well might be true, but we also kind of understand how quickly Jerry's head turns, right? So if that's kind of what I'm saying, is like, if Trey Lance goes into training camp and just kills, right? He goes into preseason, he gets legitimate snaps and he balls out. You don't think that after training camp is over, or after preseason is over, the thought, if Dak isn't done, the thought isn't going to be going through Jerry's head. We're just like he might Romo Dak. Like, yeah. I don't think that Cowboy fans are taking that as much of a possibility, whether you agree with it or not. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, my guy Falcon brings up a point, like Trey Lance literally had less than 300 snaps in the NFL. Couldn't even beat out Bradford, yada, yada, yada. My thing is,
you mean Bradford or does he mean Sam Darnold?
Because I think he meant
Sam Darnold. But
anyways, though, here's the thing. Kyle Shanahan is an offensive genius. He can work with, regardless of the quarterback in the system, he can make things work. Now, Mike McCarthy, on the other hand, is a quarterback genius, in my opinion. He will mold the quarterback into the specific general he wants to run his offense, more so than the offense being the driving force behind the quarterback.
Yeah.
Versus, you know what I mean? So right. I think that McCarthy is better suited to get the best out of Trey Lance. Now, I'm not saying that Trey Lance is going to be great or, you know, anything like that. I'm just saying is we're going with an off season of Trey Lance learning behind one of these kind of QB guru guys in a Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
And that can't be undersold. So if we do see a dramatic improvement in the preseason, in training camp from Trey Lance, you got to feel really good about your options as a front office.
I agree. And here's the thing. So let me pose a question to you, and then I want to get into this point real quick, because like coming into the draft, right? You and I are both draft geeks. Like that's what we do, right? Who coming into a draft, right? Who is a better prospect, Trey Lance or Dak Prescott?
I was very high on Dak. I'll just put that
like Dak too, but Trey Lance,
Trey Lance was very raw, but his potential, he had all the tools. He was one of those guys kind of like a Josh Allen that had all the tools. You just didn't completely see it at the collegiate level. Now he performed in the collegiate level, but it was only 1 year. Yeah. So,
right. So
yeah,
my point really is though, is that like, I think raw talent, right? Take production out of it. Mm-hmm. Raw talent. Trey Lance is better than Dak. Trey Lance has more raw talent than Dak. He's more athletic than Dak. His arm's stronger than Dak. I think size, he's better than Dak. Like, he's got more raw talent than Dak, at least in my view. But
okay, he has more. I'll say he has more tools to be better. Like, I always, you know, err on that quote of, you know, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, kind of a thing. So it doesn't matter if you have all the talent in the world, if you don't put it together and you don't work hard to elevate yourself and prepare like Dak Prescott, it's not going to matter. Now, I will say Lance does have a stronger arm than Dak. He has more mobility than Dak. And his body is more equipped to take on injury than Dak at this point, just because he's a younger guy. That's kind of where that stuff ends for me. I don't think that he's bigger, stronger than Dak necessarily, and I definitely don't think he's a better field general than Dak.
Well, okay, and all of that being considered, right? Because, like I said, I'm talking. Maybe tools is the better word, right? But kind of where I'm getting at is that we all saw what the hype around Trey Lance was. We all understood the kind of talent, the upside that he could have.
Mm-hmm.
If Dak doesn't get done, I think it would be kind of stupid to not see what you have, right? Like, that's the thing for me. It's like, I think the Cowboys would be doing themselves a disservice if they didn't entertain what they had with Trey Lance. If Dak doesn't get done, if Dak gets done, fine, all bets are off, right? Yeah. Obviously, all bets are off. But if you're getting to a point where like you're weary about the money that you want to pay Dak, you are, you know, not sure if the Dak extension is going to happen or if it's going to ever reach a conclusion. Like, I mean, at that point, you kind of have to ask yourself, you know, we have this kid here. We traded a fourth round pick for this kid for some reason. Why is it like, why wouldn't we at least entertain the idea of seeing what we have?
Well, you're definitely going to get that during the preseason this year. I don't think that's any doubt. I think it's weird with the Cowboys right now because we're so accustomed to seeing them be conservative. And this isn't conservative from them right now. This is, we're going to hedge all of our bets on this season.
Yeah.
Mike McCarthy, Mike Zimmer, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, all of them have deals to be done. Obviously, you got picked up CeeDee's fifth year option, but beside the point, you haven't extended Micah Parsons yet. You didn't really move around a lot of money. This is the telltale of them is we're going to see what we have in this year. And then we might be going to the bank and grabbing all of our money and saying, okay, we're putting it on black and we're taking the gamble with Trey Lance. And I think Jerry Jones has convinced himself every single time that he has tried to gamble big in the past.
Yeah.
That he's kind of won. Think about Deion Sanders. He gambled for him. Think right. about Terrell Owens. He kind of gambled for him. All of these things, and obviously didn't win anything with Terrell Owens, but at that point, nobody else was really willing to pay him like that. So it's one of those things he feels like, and even buying the Cowboys at that point, you know, I mean, taking that gamble has always kind of been worth it for Jerry. And everybody around him has told him, no, take it back, conservative, don't take Johnny Manziel, take Zach Martin. And that was a good thing. But at the same point, he has this idea, possibly, I'm not saying this is indefinite, he has this idea of when I gamble, things just work out. So maybe he feels that, let me gamble on Trey Lance and see if it works out and see if it's something somehow better. Than Dak Prescott. And I think it's going to end up being a mistake, and I pray that it doesn't happen, but I'm interested in, and maybe my opinion shifts if Trey Lance completely blows up preseason and goes crazy and he's just awesome. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to get into the thought process of let's move off of a top seven quarterback, at least top seven in my opinion, quarterback, to try to chase maybe getting something better. There's only six guys that are possibly better than Dak, in my opinion. So do you really think that you have the backup in the building that has that potential and you didn't even have him as your QB2 last year with Cooper Rush? Like, that just doesn't seem plausible to me. Well, but that's my opinion.
And yeah, and that's reasonable, right? Like, I don't necessarily disagree. Now, I have my own doubts about Dak. You know, I probably wouldn't put him at seven, but you know, I would say he's definitely top half of the league. That's all I'll give him at this point. But you know,
you wouldn't have him top 10.
Maybe top 10, maybe top 10.
That's crazy, Mike.
But
you're crazy.
I don't think it is. I don't think
after last year,
especially after last year,
just because of the playoff game.
But I'm absolutely including the playoff game.
No, I'm just saying that's what you're hedging it on, because you can't say that after the regular season you're hedging that on, because you'd say he's top five.
Right. If we judge individual seasons based on individual seasons, then yeah, Dak is probably top three, but I'm not basing it off that. I'm basing it off of a collective amount of work. I think that I'm hedging it most on the last year playoff game. And
I'm with my guy Falcon here.
Yeah. Well, hey, all pro, me and Falcon seem to have some different disagreements in the comments.
Doesn't have a losing season in his career.
Ever only top 15. I understand that. But listen, at the same time, this is our, ninth season with Dak. And we still have only really eclipsed a certain mountain. You know what I mean? And we've changed everything around him, right? Coaches have been different. Running game has been different. Offensive line's been different. Wide receiver's been different. Defenses have been different. The common denominator.
Jerry Jones has still been there.
Right? Yeah, Jerry Jones is still there. But we can all kind of sort of agree that the rosters that we've been putting together the past several seasons have been pretty darn good. At least I think so.
They've been good. No, I've never gone into the season thinking, geez, this is the best roster in the league. I haven't. Now, I'd say they're top five.
But here's the thing. That's my problem. That's my problem. My problem is that I don't need the best roster in the league. I don't want Dak to need the best roster in the league in order to succeed, right? I don't want that. I want somebody, like, if you're going to pay a guy $45, $50 million a year, which is what Dak is going to end up making if they extend him, right? I need you to make the rest of the team better, not the rest of the team to make you better. Like, that's my problem. You know what I mean? So, like, my issue with this whole thing, and this is why I'm, you know, these are the spats that I get in with Cowboy fans all the time, because, like, I just kind of want you to open up the idea of, like, listen, if we are getting to a point where it is getting uncomfortable to pay Dak the same amount of money as Josh Allen and Mahomes, and these, like, if it's getting uncomfortable to the point where you cannot pay him that much money anymore, you have to entertain the fact that maybe Dak isn't your quarterback in a couple of years. Maybe that's a realistic possibility. And again, I'm not saying that Trey Lance is going to be better than Dak. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is,
I don't
is
think
that
you're saying that either.
I'm not. I'm saying that if Dak doesn't get done, if you find yourself at a point where there's something impeding you from getting Dak's extension done, then entertaining Trey Lance is not a bad idea. Like, that's really where I'm getting at. So, see, and this is where people lose me, right? Josh Allen is trash. Josh Allen is definitely not trash.
Like, he's not trash, but here, I will say this. In Dak's defense, here's my thing is, what do they say about defense in the NFL? It wins championships is the quote, right? Defense is a very important thing in the playoffs. Regular season, it's not so important. I mean, realistically, you can win a lot of games without having a good defense. Now, it's when you face really good teams in the playoffs where your defense matters, because it's not, you know, I mean, it's a wider gap. It's not versus mediocre offenses, and it's against good offenses. So you have to have a good defense to kind of combat that.
Yeah.
Josh Allen has always had a defensive-minded head coach. Not only that, but Dak has had the crippling of a front office that is always too focused on the money instead of getting the players acquired around him, regardless of offense or defense. It doesn't even matter about that. To go at a serious run. They're always worried about the future. Who cares about the future? If you won one Super Bowl, you know how much money you'd be getting for your franchise? They would be shattering every other sports franchise on the entire earth if they won another championship here in the next year.
Listen, that's fine. I'm more along the lines of, like, I don't mind Dak being my quarterback. I just want Dak to be my quarterback for $30 million. Like, that's what I want.
$30 million's crazy, though.
I don't agree. I don't agree. Like, I think that this
Daniel Jones gets 40.
Daniel Jones shouldn't be getting 40. I don't, like.
But this is the thing, Mike, is you get, you're kind of along the lines of Stephen Jones in this respect. You're too worried about the money when the only thing that matters is the amount of money somebody gets paid in a given year. Not the average. Who cares about the average? It matters if you can get Dak on 1 year he's getting paid 60, but 1 year we can get him where he's getting 23 million, then the 23 million, we should be going and hunting other players who have expiring contracts from another team, hedging draft capital to get them on our team to go on a playoff run.
I like, that to me is the separation, I think. Like, I don't think that these rosters that he's been given are not good enough. I think they are. Like, I that's really the separation, right?
Offense defense was good enough.
I 100%, 100%.
No way.
100%.
Looking at the other defenses, the Niners, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and who was the other team? Detroit. Detroit's defense was meh. Okay, but let's be honest, their offense
Detroit's secondary couldn't stop a nosebleed. Here's really kind of where I'm going at, right? Every team has their flaws, right? Kansas City's defense last year was immaculate, but Patrick Mahomes was throwing to you and me, right? Like,
but he has Travis Kelce too.
Travis Kelce off of maybe his worst season as a pro. Like, Like, this is my point, right? Is like when is it going to be the point where, like, not everything around Dak has to be perfect? Like, we've protected him. We've given him a running game. We've given him receivers. Like, at some point, Dak needs to lift the rest of the team up rather than the rest of the team lifting him up. That's my problem.
I think that when the Cowboys win, you can look at the box score and it's more so because of Dak Prescott than anybody else. When they lose, it's more so because Dak played bad than anybody else. And so because of that, they go as Dak Prescott goes. How do you combat that? You build the team around him better to whenever he does falter, whenever he does throw an interception, the defense can hold up. We saw it in the playoffs with the Chiefs. I don't even think scored a second half touchdown against the Baltimore Ravens, and they still won that game. So to say that the defense isn't important or stopping the run, especially when a team gets up on you 14-0 or something, you have to be able to stop the run because they're going to just try to drain the clock.
I never said it wasn't important. But I am saying that, like,
I just think that they had severe deficiencies. Regardless, we'll go on to the next conversation. Actually, this is basically the end of the show anyways. I have a trivia question. So, no, my thing was the Cowboys defense was not good enough. I said that going into playoffs. I said I'm seriously questioning the ability to stop the run, the defensive tackles, the linebackers were horrible. Also, the penalties, both sides of the ball. We're going to come back to bite you. Dak Prescott, I think before that game, hadn't thrown an interception in 3 games straight. So probably they were due. I personally think that that first interception that was thrown was bullcrap. That should have been a DPI because Brandon Cooks was in the line of the thing. And Alexander literally goes through his body and shoulder checks him to get the interception. Whatever, beside the point, the next one was horrible. Anyways, I'm just saying, the Cowboys should have been better on defense to give Dak some help to get going, because they eventually did kind of get going. And I don't care about the garbage time. Oh, we were playing prevent defense. No, none of that stuff goes out of the window in the playoffs. You don't do that. You play your same defense. Okay. Mm-hmm. So beside the point though, I'll let you finish and then we're going to the trivia question.
Yeah. I'm at the point where, like, I want Dak for a reasonable amount of money. I cannot give him money that I constantly have to work around in order to give him a better roster. The more you pay him, and it's a known fact, right? Like, the more money that you give a quarterback, the harder it gets to put reliable pieces around him. Now, again, if you think, you and I disagree on this, but like, if you think that the roster around him wasn't good enough, okay, that's fine. Paying him more money is not going to help that problem, right?
You got to keep him. And like I said, it's the way that you structure the contract. So you can have him only hitting $25 million the first year, $32 million the second year, and having it backloaded. And you could still even have an out on that contract. So the whole aspect of, oh, he's going to get paid $65 million, that's the average per year. It really doesn't matter for those first few years. And then you can do what the freaking Seahawks did and ship him to another team and let it be their problem. So
why are we even having that conversation?
Your whole discussion is built upon trade Lance gives you the flexibility because you won't have to pay him, really. But he's already going to have to get paid next year. You're playing this year. You haven't picked up it. You declined his fifth-year option. So you play this year, and then you hopefully get Trey Lance on a whim because he's not going to start next year over Dak Prescott. You let Dak walk, and then you're hoping to get him at, okay, maybe $30 million. His agent. His agent will not let him sign a contract that is more than 3 years. So then you're going to be in the same boat 3 years later of, if he is good enough, oh, we have to pay him top quarterback money. versus doing what Atlanta just did, going and getting somebody that you can work with right now in Kirk Cousins. You can possibly trade him or whatever you want to do if the year isn't what you expect. Release him, whatever, it doesn't matter. And then you get your quarterback on a rookie deal with the fifth-year option. That's what the Cowboys should have done if they wanted to go this route. They shouldn't have wasted a fourth round on Trey Lance, and I know that he has great upside, yada, 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 whatever. But if you're going to go the route of trying to save money and build the other team around him to be better, you needed to do it with a rookie contract versus a guy that's in their fourth year already.
Okay. I mean, look, like I said, I am, you know, kind of the belief that, you know, Trey Lance is one of those guys that I don't mind taking a chance on if you can't get Dak done, right? If you have to move on from Dak for some particular reason, then Trey Lance, I think, is as decent of an option as anybody, because I think if you're declining his fifth-year option, yes, but that doesn't mean that you can't sign him back for near close to nothing given his amount of play, right? Yeah. So if that's possible, great. Okay, sign him for 2 years. Let him be your starter for 2 years or a year or something. If the first year goes terribly, then okay, then you're in the market for a quarterback again. But, you know, I don't know. I think that there are a lot of Cowboy fans that give Dak a little bit too much credit. I kind of fall on the other portion. I kind of fall on the other side of the
line. We don't even need that answer. We already know where you fall on it, Mike. It's been a fun show, man. We're gonna drop it off with the trivia question for you, Cowboys related.
Okay.
How many career sacks does Trayvon Diggs have?
Ooh. Man. You're right. This is pretty random. Yeah. I'm going to go with 5.
You're way over.
I'm way over?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do I keep guessing or no?
Yeah, you can guess one more time.
Okay. All right. If I'm way over, I don't know. He's got a sack and a half or something. I don't know.
One career sack for Trayvon Diggs.
Wow.
I just stumbled upon that whenever I was scrolling through these draft classes or whatever.
I gave him a little bit more credit than I probably should have.
Yeah, he only has one sack. He must be trash for placing the trailer.
Come on. This guy's stopping, dude. Jeez Louise.
All right, man. I think that we might be doing possibly a Grid Network / on, probably it would be streamed on my thing, but maybe a draft-centric show, just you and I. It probably won't start for a long time, but I know you mentioned that, which would be great.
Yeah,
fun. But real quick, tell the people that are still watching where to find you on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and also your show.
Yeah. So I'm Mike Guido. I'm the co-founder of The Grid. Obviously, I love EJ. I love everything that EJ does for us. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Mike Guido 49. I always go by 49. That was my baseball number growing up. So at Mike Guido 49 on Twitter. My podcast, the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast, is myself, my buddy Dalton Brown, that does it, another Grid contributor in Dalton. EJ's a jerk. He hates Michigan players. He's got a reason to hate Michigan players, dude. I mean, look at the track record. But Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast on the Grid Network every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, me and Dalton Brown, we have a great time. It's the only exclusive baseball podcast that we have at the moment. So if you like baseball, tune into that. Obviously, I dabble into everything, but there's not enough baseball talk around the national media. So that's
what is it do. All baseball, or are you kind of focusing on one
all
team?
It's all baseball, baby. Okay. It's I mean, listen, obviously we primarily focus in on Major League Baseball. But there are times where we have pure baseball discussions, things around baseball, just, you know, mechanics and all that. Like it's a fun show to have. Him and I were both, you know, Dalton's a former college pitcher at Duke. So, you know, I didn't make it past high school, but you know, whatever, I'm 5'11 and You know, yeah. I'm overweight now, and I topped out at 82. What do you want me to? What do you want me to say? But
that's okay, man.
But
we still love you.
Yeah, that's why I became a broadcaster and not a player. But yeah, it's all fun stuff. So if you feel like it, if you're a baseball fan, tune in. Again, Mondays 8 p.m. Eastern time, and you can catch me pretty much anywhere. I'm on 8 o'clock spot a lot. I'm sure me and AJ will do stuff in the future, so you'll be seeing me around.
Absolutely. Pleasure to have you on, Mike. If it is your first time on here, please do subscribe, hit the notification bell. Always dropping a new show every Tuesday. Obviously, last week didn't work out just because I was kind of under the weather. But I'm going to be trying to drop a lot more videos with a fun guest from Cowboys Nation, and possibly even bringing some guys in from the other NFC East rival teams to kind of pick their brain and kind of see where their teams are at in the future. So if any of that sounds fun, do leave a like, subscribe, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks. Mm-hmm.